Hey, everybody, on this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, we're getting up close and personal with actor Jay Lee. Let's do it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
That's right. Seal plays us in for this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On. Yes!
So good.
Of course, this is the show where we get up close and personal with people both in front and behind the camera that bring you all that great entertainment you watch, whether it's on the big screen, on the small screen in your TVs, or maybe even your mobile streaming device. I'm your host, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Now, my guest who's jamming out to this sweet song, he's a prime example of why you should always pursue your dreams.
Yep.
He started playing piano at the age of 3, and then after graduating from Indiana University's renowned Jacobs School of Music, he took his last $200, headed west to pursue a career in entertainment, and now you can catch him every Thursday night on the Orville, where he plays helmsman Lieutenant John Lamar. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jay Lee.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for choosing a sweet song.
This song is so good.
When's the first time you heard it? Was it in the Batman movie?
I'm telling you, yeah, this was the Batman when he had nipples, and this was the weird one. And I remember loving the song, though. It was great. And I can't sing, but I try to sing this at karaoke all the time.
Does anybody ever stop me and say, Jayna, please?
Everybody always stops me. They're like, cut it. The DJ stops me. He's like, stop this right now.
Jay, you haven't learned your lesson.
No,
please.
No. If clearly, I'm persistent. This is why I'm here.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So we're talking about singing, but you got your start with music at such a young age. What was it about playing piano at the age of 3 that really kind of, what was it about the piano that kind of said, like, I want to play this?
You know, the story I've heard from my mother is that we had a piano at the house. My sister played, and I guess I would wake up in the middle of the night and go down and just bang on the piano. And then finally, she got me lessons, so I would take like 10-minute lessons with my sister's teacher. And I guess, took to the piano and stayed with it and just ended up being pretty good at it. And my mom, she saw that I had a little something, so she kind of pushed me towards it.
Was that something easy to stay with? Because certainly as you're getting older and you're meeting new friends and social activities start entering the picture, whether it's sports or after school just hanging out with friends, was it easy to still keep pursuing the piano?
Not at all. It was very hard because, you know, I had to practice every day. I actually quit when I was 6. I remember being like, this is too much. This is too much work. I want to play with my friends. So I quit. My mom, she let me quit. And I remember like 6 months later, I saw this young girl on PBS playing. And I was like, man, I'm better than her. And I went back to my mom and I said, hey, I want to take lessons again. And she said, okay, but if you take lessons again, you have to play until you graduate high school. Like, that's the agreement we have to make. Yeah.
And how old were you when you decided to make that deal?
I made that deal when I was 6.
Okay, so that was
6 and a half when I'd made that arrangement.
So you're figuring like almost like 12 years of like, all right, we're going to be doing this. And you were like, all right, I'm in?
Yeah, I mean, there were times where it was difficult because, you know, I was an athlete and I liked hanging with my friends and doing that stuff, but I had to practice 2-3 hours a day and I had lessons twice a week. Then I had competitions and travel. So, I mean, it wasn't easy, but I think that work ethic is what sort of started a lot of, you know, the trajectory of me being out here right now.
I always feel like anybody that plays piano, I'm an envy of, because I feel like you can just walk into anywhere, and if there happens to be a piano in the room, you can really just kind of go over there and just start, you know, just impressing everybody.
Yeah, you know, if you like classical music, right? But I've run into a few people who don't, and they're like, oh, do you know, play Benny and the Jets? And I'm like, I know Chopin.
Yeah.
Can you,
so you never made the leap like to playing like Elton John or Billy Joel?
No, I mean, you know, I can mess around a little bit, but I was so sort of disciplined in classical music and really doing the competition circuit and recitals and performances and travel, and that took up all of my time. So the idea of improv and jazz, that's a whole different side of the brain. And I just, yeah, classical was just sort of my thing.
What is a piano competition like?
All right, well, you go, and then you don't see anybody else black normally, and then you you go up, and then my last name is Lee, so when they call me up, everybody looks very confused, because they're like, hey, not only is he black, but he has a Korean last name, and there are a lot of other Asian students who are great, and everybody's just all the way confused, and then you play, and then I smile, and I leave, and then I win.
That's
how competitions go.
What kind of trophy? Do you get a trophy where it's somebody playing the piano on the top of it?
Yeah, you just get a music note and a high five. No, I do remember. Actually, this is an interesting story. I was about 12, and again, I'd been playing classical, and I remember looking in the paper, and there was a competition notice for ragtime in St. Louis. And St. Louis had a really big sort of ragtime Scott Joplin, you know, festival, and that was in Sedalia, Missouri. But there was a big ragtime music sort of scene. So the competition was in 3 weeks, and I asked my mom, I said, hey, can I do this competition? And she said, no, you don't play ragtime. The competition's in 3 weeks. You have this other stuff you have to do, and you still have school. You don't have the time. So I begged her. Finally, she said, okay, you can do it. But that doesn't mean you get to stop practicing everything else. So anyway, do it. So for 3 weeks straight, I bust my ass. I learn Maple Leaf Rag. There's a small version of it. And I go to this competition and I play. And I got third, right? And I remember after the competition, I got a check. I got a little trophy or something. And I went and I was in the car on the way home. And I was just really, really quiet. And I remember my mom looked over at me and she said, you know, what's wrong? You won. Like, you did it. You know, in 3 weeks you put this together and you placed. This is amazing. You should feel so proud of yourself. And I was just staring out the window and I go, that's it? And she said, what do you mean? And I said, all that work for the last 3 weeks, that's just it? It's over now? And that was the first time I sort of faced the idea that you have to keep doing the thing. You have to keep on, you know, finding the things and trying the things, and you finish it and then you start over. So every time I had a competition, you place, you win, and then you start over. You do a brand new repertoire, you do a brand new set. So I think just getting used to that also sort of instilled all that sort of discipline. And if you finish a script, oh, what do you want to do next as a writer? Well, you write another one, you know? So it's just the same sort of muscle memory.
So as you're getting ready to go to college, was mm-hmm. there any thought of like, well, because you, as you mentioned, sports, mm-hmm. was there any thought that you might want to pursue something athletically in school, or was always kind of playing music was always kind of be your way?
No, I was really good at track. I was going to do some track somewhere and run around and jump over hurdles. But I got a music scholarship. And the reason I chose IU is because it was a D1 program and they still had sports. So I didn't run track my first year, because I wanted to just focus on music. But one of my buddies was a sprinter, and I just missed it. So I went to the coach and I told him my times, because I broke my record in high school, and I was pretty good. And the coach was like, yeah, come on out. So I ran track for a little bit. But I didn't have time to do everything I wanted to do in college.
I feel like that's the toughest thing, especially when it's like trying to figure out what you really want to do, and there's so many things that you could explore in college, but there's so little time too.
Yeah, but that's why I loved Indiana, because I had a really great college experience. So the music school is top notch. You know, it's one of the best in the country. It's a Big Ten school. You know, it was sort of a party school. I'm in a fraternity. I was president of my fraternity. I did the track for it, you know, a bit. Played a lot of basketball with a lot of great guys, intramurals and all of that. And yeah, I had the whole sort of range of college.
Now, I've only been to Indiana University once, as I went to the Indy 500. It's I want to go out and check out the university since I'm so close.
Yeah.
Did you go check out Indy 500 while you were living there?
No.
No?
No, I was never a big NASCAR race car guy.
Yeah? That wasn't your thing?
No, I just like driving fast and getting tickets.
Well, I think everybody loves driving fast. I don't think anybody loves getting the ticket part.
No, that's not fun. My mother got upset when I was getting tickets back in college.
I just got a ticket a couple weeks ago and I still hated it.
Terrible.
It's just that feeling just never.
And don't you hate when they're like, you know where I pulled? Yes, just give me my ticket and leave me alone.
It's like, well, of course you know. We all know.
Yeah, I'm not happy. Give me this pen and get away from me.
So as you graduate from IU, was there any thought of like, what made you decide like, hey, I'm going to head west. I'm not going to maybe like head to Chicago, head to New York. What kind of drew you out to LA?
I actually thought about Chicago. I was going to go to Chicago and do theater for maybe a year or two. New York, I don't sing, so Broadway was sort of, or musicals was, that was, that's a big part of New York, and I'm like, I don't do that, so
let me. Evidenced by your Seal karaoke.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm much better now.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I mean, you can see me for the cheap price of $8 at Brass Monkey for a beer or something. So I thought about Chicago. But then there was something about film and TV that I knew I really wanted to do. And luckily, this is the city to be in. So it sort of made my decision a lot easier.
When you tell your mom, like, hey, you know what? I'm going to head west to L.A. Is she excited by that idea? Is she like, I don't know if
No, she was always in.
Yeah?
That's great. I've had nothing but support from my friends and family. I can't remember a time where, you know, I didn't feel supported in my decision. I really can't. Yeah, my mom was like, go for it.
Because I feel like what you did, there's people can fall on either side of that decision, where if it's your last $200, they say, I can't. There's no way I could survive out there. I'm just going to stay wherever I'm at.
Yeah.
At least I know the people around me. I'm kind of comfortable.
Yeah.
And then there are other people that are going to say, you know what? I'm just going to go for it because this is what I really want.
Well, yeah, I remember I had a when I graduated college, I went back to St. Louis, and I was the musical director for West Side Story at a small theater out there. And I got paid like $1,000 or $2,000, something like that. And paid a lot of bills off, those tickets, those parking tickets, you know, just random bills. And I remember, you know, I was just sort of spending my money just maintaining in St. Louis. And as my money was going down, I started thinking, man, am I going to have to get a job here and save money to then move to L.A.? So at that point, I was looking at, you know, maybe trying to play ball somewhere overseas or some random semi-pro thing. My brother worked at MasterCard. I was like, maybe I'll just get a job at MasterCard for a year or two, because he's sort of a big-time dude over there. And I got down to my last $200, and I was at my mom's place, and I remember just going in the back room, and I just said a prayer, and I was like, listen, this is how I talk to God. I'm like, hey, man, look.
Very casual relationship.
This is,
like,
you know, this is God. You can talk to God how you want to talk to God, right? I said, listen, I want to go to L.A. I really do. Like, I really want to do this. If I'm not supposed to and I'm supposed to stay here, cool. Let me know now. But if not, let me go right now. Like, give me away. And I remember in the next 5 minutes, I told my mom, I said, I'm driving to L.A. tonight. And she said, okay. And I called my sister. I said, hey, I'm moving to L.A. My nephew at the time, Darian, he answered the phone. He's 15. I said, yeah, man, tell your mom, tell your brother I'm leaving. Tell your mom I love her. And he said, can I go with you? I said, ask her. I'll be there in 15 minutes. And he said, hey, Ma, Jay's going to L.A. Can I ride with him? She said, yeah. I said, all right, man, pack a bag. So I went and picked him up, and then we drove all the way out to L.A. together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The road trip, do you kind of take your time, do some stops along the way, or is it pretty much we're going to go straight
through? Trying to get here.
Yeah.
I got here in like 2 days.
And when you get here, did you already have friends out here?
So oddly enough, I have a sister who lives out here on my father's side, and she was living out – she still lives out sort of – two and a half hours east of here. So, you know, I hadn't talked to her a lot because she had moved to L.A. when she was younger, and, you know, I was in St. Louis, and then I went to Indiana. So I found her number, and I called her. I said, hey, this is your little brother, you know, moving to L.A. At some point, figured I'd just say what's up because she's older than me. And she said, hey, well, when you get here, let me know. You can, you know, crash here until you get on your feet. So I said, okay. So that was sort of lined up. So then when I went back home, did the musical, and then I got down to that last two. I said, if I crack this $100 bill, I'm not leaving. I'm gonna be here. And I don't know how long I'm gonna be here, but if I crack this $100, I'm not leaving. So that's when I jumped in the car, drove straight out. I drove, 2 days I was out here.
Man, so when you land and you're staying, so basically when you first got here, you were staying about 2.5 hours outside of LA.
Let me tell you how geeked up I was. Actually, one of my best friends, he had moved out here after high school. So we graduated high school. He came to L.A., lived with his cousin. What's up, D? It's my brother right there. So he came to L.A. to do music. And I go to college, and all my buddies have sort of gone to different spots, college, military, whatever, right? So he was in Pasadena doing music, like at his friend's house. So I drive from L.A. I drive all the way to Pasadena. When I get in town to see him, I'm like, bro, I'm here. Rap with him for like 30 minutes, and then drive all the way to Moreno Valley like the same night. But I was just so geeked up that 3 hour drive, 3.5 hour drive was like, this is fun. I'm having a good time.
So you set up camp back in Moreno Valley, as you're saying, when you first started out here. How challenging was it to get out here to kind of pursue possible job opportunities when you're traveling like 2.5 hours?
Yeah, it was difficult. So what I did was, first thing I did was I got a job at the mall, Riverside Mall. Shout out Guess. So I worked at Guess.
What made you choose Guess out of everything else in the mall?
Man, I was just in the mall like, I need a job. I was like, I need to work because I need gas money because I got to go be famous in L.A. I would have taken a job at Auntie Annie's.
Yep.
Spencer's.
Oh, Spencer's. Who doesn't love a good Spencer's?
Right? The black light and the weird cards. I would have taken a job at Lane Bryant. I don't care. I needed a paycheck.
I worked in Spencer's in my last year of high school.
Yeah.
Oh, it was rough.
That's a weird little spot.
There was somebody, they went into the back of the store and then they pooped in the back of the store and I had to go clean that up. That was gross.
Where else do you poop?
I mean, that's Spencer Gifts. Come on.
Yeah. Hey, man. Hey, let's go to the movies and then go poop at Spencer's. Hey, guys. You know what ladies like? Pooping in the back of Spencer's. Yeah.
It's a way to impress a babe.
That's what. Hey. Shout out pooping the Spencer's. No, I'm done. Hey, but seriously, guys. Eat fiber and drink a lot of water. It's good for your...
It helps.
Yeah.
Yep.
So got a job with Guess. Speaking of poop.
Yeah.
I was making poop. Wasn't making a lot of money.
But you get a discount on clothes?
I made so little, I couldn't even, like, buy the clothes. So what if my paycheck was, like, either I could fill up my gas tank or buy this shirt. So I would fill my gas tank up and literally drive... It was so dumb, but I was so excited to be here. I would drive to L.A., and just be in L.A., like I'm here.
So where do you start looking for job opportunities?
I really wasn't even looking for job opportunities. I was just sort of, like, trying to figure out just how to just navigate L.A. So let me rewind the tape a little bit. So senior year of college, I ended up graduating with a theater degree and a piano performance degree. So because I started taking acting classes in college after I broke my thumb. So that was freshman year was the first time I decided, oh, I actually want to be an actor and I'm not going to do the classical piano thing. So I was still doing the degree, but I knew I didn't want to go into that field professionally. So anyway, at theater, did some plays. So my last year, I ended up doing a special course study that I created with one of my acting teachers. And it was basically like, actor making it in LA film and television. So it was like a created course and I needed it for like 3 or 4 credit hours. So we would meet and we would discuss LA. And by the way, we were in Bloomington, Indiana. So nobody knew nothing about LA, but we would discuss like, here's what you do and here's what you can do. And I bought a book and the book was The Actor's Guide to Making It in LA. So in the book, they had like coffee shops and acting classes and where do people hang out and all the dumb shit that never works, right? So I read this book and I'm like, Starbucks, the Starbucks on La Brea and whatever. I'm just going to go there and just be famous and somebody's going to give me $20 million a movie.
That's right. There you go.
That was my plan.
And they were just waiting as you walked into that Starbucks like, Jay, finally.
Man, we've been here for so long.
Here's your briefcase.
Here's the key to the lock. Here you go. Fame and fortune awaits, you know. But I would literally just come into the city and, you know, I'd meet friends and meet people. And, you know, it's weird thinking about it because I don't know what my plan really was. I just was so happy to be in L.A. That was the win.
When you're reading that book, because, I mean, I think all of us who've ever wanted to move out here to L.A. to pursue something in the entertainment industry have read some sort of book to kind of give you some insight, especially if you don't live around here. Was there anything that was really useful out of that book that you're like, yep, this was right?
You know, it was little stuff that, I mean, it was stuff like how to get a headshot and, you know, the listings of castings and managers and agents and a lot of stuff. I don't know if people still use that nowadays, but, you know, you submit you make a postcard and you send it to the casting agents and all of that stuff. So I didn't have the money to do any of it. I just read it. Like, if I had money, I would do it. But if I had money, I wouldn't need to do it. So then it's just a weird catch 22.
All right. So as you rewind the tape, let me jump back as well. When you injured your thumb and you started doing, what was it about acting that kind of resonated with you more than playing the piano?
Well, I don't think it was more. I just think it was, you know, as an artist, it's just a different way to express. So whether it's piano, whether it's I ended up being a writer, I never knew I was going to be a writer, you know, writing film and television and literary stuff that if you would have told me in high school I would be a writer, I would have laughed at you. But I just feel like it's all a different part of the same thread of sort of creation, art, you know, stuff like that.
But I guess because as you mentioned, it kind of made you feel like this is something you want to pursue more than pursuing a career playing piano.
Yeah, well, I've been doing that for so long. And that's a really specific sort of lane. And, you know, it's not too many things you can do. You know, if you're great, you can be a performer. But again, you got to really, really spend time doing that. If you are, you might want to be a teacher, you know, but I didn't really want to do either one of those because, again, I've been doing it for so long. And I found other interests, you know. Again, I think being in a fraternity and being president, that really opened my eyes to a lot of different things I had and wanted to do as far as, like, being a leader or creating programs and, you know, helping people. I think all of those things kind of came into it. So I just truly didn't have enough time to practice 4 or 5 hours a day. I just didn't have the time.
How often do you play now, just for yourself?
I'm back into it now. I did a concert when I was out here, about 2 years after I moved out, and I'm putting together one right now that I've been toying with for about 4 years now. But I'm finally making myself do it.
Yeah. Well, you've been just a little busy since you.
A little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. So you come out here. You mentioned headshots. Getting a headshot. What was it like getting your first headshots?
Horrible. Yeah. You know what I did? I'm gonna tell you how dumb I was. So I got a headshot, right? And I'm 23, something like that, right? 24. I don't even. But I remember, like, I had like a suit jacket on and like a button up, and I'm like, in my brain, because I'm a theater actor, I can play anything. I can be the dad. I can be the son. I can be the hero. And I quickly learned that's not how it works out here. Like, they have people who are the dad. I'm not beating out a 40-year-old at 20-something yeah. to be the, where's my daughter? I'm not that guy. So my first headshot was a cool photo. It's so confusing, though, because you look at it and you're like, what is it? I don't know what this photo is. It was black and white. I was dressed up, but I was too young to be the lawyer, and I was like way too dressed up to be the high school athlete. It was a waste of money. It was a waste of money. It was a good shot. It's at my mom's house somewewhere.
She saw it like on the mantle somewhere. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's my boy right
there. There he is. Nothing black and white.
Yeah, there you go. What is he doing now? I couldn't tell you from this photo. But,
yeah, but he's talented.
That's right.
He can play so many things.
So then what led you to working over with Seth MacFarlane and his production company?
Dave Neustadter. He works at New Line Cinema. There was a guy I met at Indiana University before I moved out, and I've told the story before, but it really sort of speaks to when you make a decision, random things will open up for you. So when I decided I was moving to LA, I didn't know when, though, because I went back home and did the musical, but I knew I wanted to come to LA, and I met a guy randomly getting my oil changed, and I was just so excited. I was like, hey, man, I'm moving to LA, I'm an actor, blah, 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 blah. And he said, hey, well, give me your email address. I know two people out there. They went to IU. Maybe you could link up with them. And one was this makeup artist. She never wrote me back. And the other was this guy, Dave Neustadter, who at the time was like an assistant or intern or something at New Line. So I had also read a book on how to write screenplays, because this is what you do. How do you make it as an actor in LA? How do you write screenplays? Boom. So I read those, became proficient in like a day at both, right? So I started writing this movie idea. So when I emailed Dave, I said, hey, man, moving to L.A., I'm an actor, you work at New Line Cinema, put me in some movies. And he's like, that's not how, what?
I wish that was just great. If he just knew somebody that's kind of tangentially in the industry, just put me in some movies. I'm here.
Listen, Menace to Society, New Line Cinema, y'all made it. Yeah. Put me in something. What's the problem here? So Dave was like, man, you have a lot to learn. This is not how it works. But I heard you wrote a script. I said, yeah, but I'm not a writer. I was just doing this to kill time. And he said, no, you're a writer if you wrote a script. You're a writer. And I didn't understand that until a little bit later. So by the time I moved out here and I finished the script, he was the one that convinced me, oh, I'm actually a writer. So he was the one that called and said, hey, after I moved out here, he said, there's a position open. Katie Krentz, who's big time now, she was the receptionist at Family Guy. She also went to IU. She got promoted, tells Dave, hey, I got a promotion. Do you know anybody who needs a job? Dave's like, yes, his kid Jay Lee just moved out here. He's working at Guess or Auntie Annie's or some shit. He might need a job. So he called me up. He said, hey, man, you want a job? And I was like, for what? I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be too busy counting money to work. But then I took the job, clearly.
What was
and that was as the receptionist at Family Guy.
What was it like when you were finally able to live out here in L.A. and you did not have to do that horrendous 2.5-hour commute?
Oh, I slept in my car. So what happened was, yeah, so I got hired, And then the commute was just horrific. And the living situation was, you know, a little less than ideal. So it was easier for me to just sleep in my car during the week. And then on the weekends, I would go back, crash two nights, and then come back and sleep in my car during the week. So I did that until I saved enough money to get my own place.
How long was that? Like 5 months? Less?
Yeah, like 6 months.
Man.
Yeah, like 6 months.
What's your routine when you're sleeping in a car in terms of got to use a restroom, got to be able to brush my teeth, got to be able to freshen up?
You go to Spencer's.
Yeah, because we already know. That's right. Yeah. You just go in the back corner.
Hey, guys, sorry. I need to relieve myself at Spencer's.
That's right.
Also, let me get one of these bouncy balls and this Batman toy. No, I got a gym membership. So,
smart thinking. 24-hour fitness is your friend at that point.
That's it. So I would wake up, I'd go work out, take a shower, go to work, get off work, go play basketball for hours. Shower, go eat Taco Bell, and then go to bed because that's all I could afford.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But what's great is that, I mean, the fact that a lot of opportunities start opening up for you once you start working over there at the production company.
Yeah, yeah. I met a lot of people, learned a lot, learned a whole lot. Was cutting up those headshots at the front. yeah, I learned a heck of a lot being at the front desk there.
How does it work? Because, like, in terms of being a receptionist, how does that path work where it's like, would they just need an extra hand doing something and they reach out to you like, Jay, we need some help doing this? Or do you pose interest like, if you guys ever need anything?
No, none of the above. What I did was I answered the phones and when people would come in to do voices or, you know, meet or whatever, I would just, you know, make sure they went to the right place. But honestly, most of the time I was up there doing my own thing. I was up there writing scripts. Like I said, I made a film actually and came back and edited it from the front desk. And I say this because it was a thin line between doing your job and then doing too much. And I found a good balance, and the people that worked there were extremely supportive of everything I wanted to do and knew that I had bigger, you know, aspirations. And yeah, they were behind everything I was doing. And I met Seth and one of my best friends out here, and that was like completely unexpected, but literally being at the front desk is how I met a lot of important people in my life.
At what point that you're working there, do they start saying, Jay, we need some help here in the writer's room, or we need something with this?
No. The first time I was ever in a writer's room was as a writer. So I never was in the writer's room. I never was a writer's PA, writer's assistant, none of that.
Went from reception to boom, going to be in there because you've given samples and whatnot.
I went from receptionist to being broke. See, that's the key, kids. 0 to 100, you got to stop it broke. So I left Family Guy. I made a film, finished it. It played some festivals. And then I left. I said, I got to go because it's just time for me. I've been here a couple years. I got to go. So I left and wrote a bunch of my own stuff and was trying to produce some stuff on my own. And all of it sort of, you know, you can only do so much on your own. But what I was learning a lot during that time. So then a few years later, I guess 4 years later, really, I ended up going back to write for the Cleveland show. But that was the first time I was ever in a writer's room, is when I was as a writer, which was also very weird.
What was it like to go back into a place where you'd worked, but now you're coming in as a writer?
It was fun. And also, a lot of the cats that worked there as PAs, they had, you know, gone up through the ranks and were now writers on Family Guy and American Dad and now Cleveland. So I knew most of the people that worked there. So it was sort of like coming back home because I knew that family. But, yeah, I didn't really know how the room worked, so I had to learn that pretty quickly. But I did, and after that I was good.
Now, for somebody that clearly hustling and as passionate as you are, when you get a chance to meet somebody like Seth who, my gosh, he's got so many things going on so often, what do you take away from the way that he kind of balances everything that he's trying to achieve?
I mean, his work ethic. I mean, he's you know, he's there all the time. Right, you can't do it if you're not doing it. I mean, it sounds kind of corny, but he actually puts the work in. So even back then, before, you know, the films and a lot of the other stuff he was doing, it was really Family Guy and American Dad. And, you know, he was doing all the voices and he was, you know, he was in the writer's room and going over the scripts and everything. And then from there, he really started to expand his brand. And that's when, you know, the film and the music and the other projects he was working on and hosting and all these other things sort of came into fruition.
Now, for him, as somebody like, because he worked on the Cosmos reboot, right, that they did there, when did he ever start kind of talking to you like, you know, I've got this idea for like my take on a science fiction show very similar to like Star Trek or something?
You talking about for Orville?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. So we were at dinner one night and in Seth's very sort of nonchalant way. He's like, hey, I've got this project. I'm thinking about you for a character. I mean, would you want to act in projects that aren't yours? Or would you be interested in that?
And you said no immediately. No, thank you.
It's like, nah. Yeah, I read a book.
That's right.
I've read a book on how to make it.
I'm going to get my briefcase at Starbucks.
Yes. First, I'm going to go poop at Spencer's. Then that's I'm going to the bank to cash this check, Seth. He said that, and I was like, yeah, sure. Let me know. And didn't hear anything for a while. And also, you gotta remember, like, the way my, like, career has been set up at every stage is it's like nothing and then all of it. So I don't have any co-stars, no guest stars. I was never background in TV, you know, so it went from never being on TV to being like one of the leads on the show. But the reason I was prepped for that is all the stuff I was doing on my own for so long, right? So when he said it, like, yeah, I got this thing, I was like, yeah, sure, let me know. So then I don't hear anything. I'm flying back from out of the country because I took a trip and I was super zenned out and all relaxed and everything. And I remember being on the plane, landing back at LAX. I turned my phone on and I got a bunch of text messages and I have a voicemail from a good buddy of mine who's an actor, way more talented and famous than I am. And he said, hey man, I just went in for this project, the Seth MacFarlane project. And we're like the same type, by the way. So he's like, yeah man, I just went in for this project. You know, do you mind putting a good word in with Seth for me? So I'm on the plane immediately stressed out. So I went from about to be so cool back in LA, I'm zenned out, to what the fuck?
Yeah, like, supposed to be my part.
I didn't know what was going on. But I texted Seth. I said, hey man, my buddy's really talented. I don't know if you've cast the role yet. I don't even know if that's the role you were thinking about me for, but I mean, this guy's really great. Let me know if you still want to see me for something. And he texted back, oh yeah, somebody will reach out to you next week. But again, as actors know, it's, you know, you feel like, it's not like he got the audition. He's like, I'd already gone in for it.
Yeah.
So casting had been sent out. People have been working on the audition. Like, people were going in. I had no idea. So then the next week I got a call and I went in and did it and did the test and everything. And then come to find out after I booked it, Seth was like, it was always you. I wrote it for you. And yeah, you still got to go through the steps. But
I mean, I guess better to know that after the fact, because knowing that ahead of time, it's like, yeah, this is just,
I don't know.
Just go through these steps.
It's tough. I mean, you know, because, you know, I read the script and I could tell he wrote it with me in mind. So you could feel both ways. You could feel like, I mean, this is mine to lose. You know, I got it and it's up to me to mess it up. Or you feel like, let me go in there and fight for it and prove I'm the right one. And, you know, I chose that one instead of the first one, because you never know.
True, yeah, that overconfidence can sometimes be your undoing. Like, this is mine, so I don't have to worry.
Yeah, yeah.
It just kind of goes through.
Yeah, like I went to Express one time, and I had to go to the bathroom, and I was like, you know what, this is not the place, Spencer's.
That's right.
I was almost overconfident.
Yep, you don't want to do that. No. You know, yep.
Absolutely. By the way, true story, the reason Express is called Express, because it used to be called Structure. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, okay.
It was called Structure. They changed it because I'm done with it.
That's it. That bit was going somewhere good.
Yeah, it's dead. Muerta.
So now working on the Orville.
Yeah.
What I like is that I know certainly there's been a lot of comparisons between
How are you doing? Do you want me to can I ask you questions about you?
If you want. I mean, but I'm really boring. I'm not as cool as Jay.
I feel like, man, yeah. I appreciate it. You're doing great, man. I'm saying right. Words up here. Am I doing okay?
You're doing great.
You sure?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let me know if you want
Jay, let's see if we can get a nod. Oh, we're getting a thumbs out from Chelsea. So look at
Chelsea, say hello.
That's right. Shout out to her.
Hi. What's up, Chelsea? Turn up.
There you go. Sitting there freezing right here in the room.
It's cold in here.
It is. It's like almost like being in Superman's Fortress of Solitude inside here.
Or it's just like 70.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You
never
know.
Or it's a comfortable. Everybody's fine.
Everybody's cool. Just yeah, we're
got
relaxed.
Some room temperature. It's fine. We're good.
So the Orville, I know with Star Trek Discovery coming on as well, there's been a lot of comparisons about the two of them. And the show that it really kind of, the episode that really kind of made it for me was the third episode, where deciding the gender assignment for the baby. I just finished watching that today, and that was, man, that was probably my favorite episode of the series so far.
Yeah,
I really like that.
We jumped right in. I remember shooting that episode, and that was a big episode because we had the Mocklin trial, and we had a lot of extras, and the set was amazing, and we were on a different stage at, on the Fox lot, and I just remember that was a heavy episode, and it ends. It doesn't end the way you think it's going to end.
No, you think like it's, hey, everything's going to turn out. Somebody's going to speak up for the right thing, and of course the right thing's going to happen.
Yeah.
And things don't turn out the way that you expect at all in that episode.
But I think the big sort of idea of that is, how do you sort of judge another culture on your value system? And we all have our own value system. And, I think that's a pretty dope concept to put in, you know, this dramedy.
And also, like, the beginning of the episode, as they're playing with the holographic technology, their version of holotech, you're over shooting, like a your take on a Western.
Yeah.
Where'd you guys shoot that?
We shot that up at Santa Clarita. So I had to learn how to ride a horse. So I was riding a horse. And it was a lot of fun, though. I always wanted to be in a Western anyway. Like, I rode a Western.
You rode a Western? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, really?
I did.
Nice. Yeah. Did you get a chance to shoot it?
No. This was when nobody cared about me.
But now people are going to start caring.
Now.
So this script's ready to come out of the drawer and ready to be made.
Oh, boy. Where the money at?
That's right.
It was a good, it's actually a pretty cool Western. I like it.
I feel like that's the nice thing about the science fiction genre, is that when you introduce stuff like holographic technology, all of a sudden the room, the door is open for all kinds of cool stuff.
We can
stuff
go wherever we want to go. You know, I think that was a really really cool device we can use. And it opens up all of our stories, and, you know, it gives us opportunity to tell a lot of different stories and a lot of different time periods. There's some stuff coming up that's pretty cool that we sort of use it for. I don't want to give too much away, but it's good.
Now, as we meet your character in the first episode,
yeah,
your big thing is the old captain let us drink soda on the bridge, and we still do that.
Look, so, you know, my character John was a part of the Orville crew before Seth's character Ed gets this assignment. I'm really good at my job. I've been doing it a long time. You know, and I just wanted to sort of suss them out a little bit. Like, can I drink soda? How is this relationship going to work? And then we quickly have a bond, and he says yes, and now I'm rocking with him.
So.
But that was John's sort of test. Like, you know, who's on third?
That's right. Yeah, if you say no, then all right, we're just going to be like this then.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, this is how we'll play it.
Yeah.
Okay, but if we can have soda, it'll be a cool bridge.
Now, I always wonder, like, with the two people at the helm, how does it distinguish between what you and what Scott Grimes is doing in terms of who does what in terms of the function?
By the way, man, Scott Grimes, that's my man right there. I love that dude. He's awesome. I love working with him. And it's actually like this. A lot of the sort of comedy and humor is us at the front sort of cracking jokes and talking about the things that are happening. As far as our specific jobs go, you know, he's the pilot. I'm a navigator. I put in our destinations and map our course. He's the one who's actually physically, you know, moving the ship. And, you know, sometimes they swap. But, yeah, he's an amazing pilot, his character. In real life, he sucks at flying ships.
Wow, finish Scott. Who's giving Scott Grimes that?
Scott Grimes can't fly a ship at all. And if you believe it, he can't fly a ship.
So if he's saying, Jay, come on, man, I got a ship this weekend.
Nah, not going with Scott.
No?
Nah. He can ride horses, though. He's dope at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he talked, because he had, you know, he'd been in some films before where he had to be on a horse. And yeah, so he gave me some pointers. But yeah, we're pretty much, we move the ship.
Which I love that. And I love that there's such a great camaraderie between the two of you. Where for in the episode there about a girl, where you go and you use Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer
as a way to
open up the doors up to his eyes, but like, hey, maybe you should reconsider.
That was Seth. You know, that was the writing. I thought that was a pretty funny, simple device. And when we shot that scene, Peter had a very amazing take where he's just staring at the screen and he's just in shock and awe of like, that's it, you know? And we cracked a few times, like, because the camera's here on Peter, so we're over here, and we're just both holding laughter because he just held that sort of stoic face to play that joke so well. Yeah.
It was so nicely done, and I feel like it was just with Seth's writing, it didn't beat it over the head, the idea of, like, oh, we're going to show him, like, a really obvious film.
Right.
It's like, all right, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but it really, the lessons there, the kind of moral of that really applies to the situation at hand.
Have you about Olive? The 13th reindeer?
Oh, wait. I think I've heard of that, but I don't know much about that.
Olive the other reindeer?
Yeah.
He's the one they used to call Rudolph names. Olive?
Olive?
Shout out Christmas.
Boom.
Turn up. Boom. Shout out Christmas gift, Sega Genesis. What's happening? Sonic Hedgehog was good.
That was your favorite Christmas gift?
I remember Sonic the Hedgehog, yeah. When I was a kid. I was young.
When's the last time you played a Sonic game?
I couldn't even tell you.
Do you play any games right now? Or do you?
You know what? I just got an Xbox, actually. Xbox hooked me up.
Really?
Yeah, they gave me a cool, like, limited edition Xbox, so I've been playing a little bit.
So Xbox guy as opposed to a PlayStation guy?
I never had a PlayStation, but I always had an Xbox, and so I've been playing Batman.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Batman. I'm Batman.
Are you getting into Injustice?
I haven't gotten that yet. But see, it's a slippery slope. I got to write scripts. I got to act.
No, that's true. That's true. There's too many distractions. Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to be careful.
All right, so walk me through like a typical like kind of, all right. Anyway, guys, okay. It's been a pleasure. We just end that on a really down note.
Credits. Da 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 da.
Yeah. How do you balance everything that you want to be doing? So you're shooting a show, you're shooting a major network series, plus you want to do the stuff that you want to be doing. So how do you balance out the day?
One thing I learned being in my fraternity is there are way more hours in the day and way more time in the day than you think. So it really comes down to time management for me. And I feel very blessed because I like what I do. So if I have to, you know, write a script or take a meeting or do this thing or go shoot this thing, it's fun for me. So I just feel really blessed that I feel like, you know, my purpose and my desire have sort of lined up.
The example where if you're getting opportunity to pursue the stuff that you really want to be pursuing, you'll find the time.
You'll find the time.
Yeah. Make it happen
absolutely.
For yourself.
Absolutely.
Somebody who's paying you to play a bunch of video games, you'd find the time.
Yeah, you would find the time.
Get on that Xbox and start tearing it up.
I'm Batman.
So in addition to the Orville, and did it get a full season pickup?
So we shot a full season. They're airing it now.
Yes, Thursday nights.
Thursday nights. We're waiting to hear. You know, people seem to like it, so hopefully we'll be shooting a second season. In addition to that, I got some ideas, film, TV, across the sort of board, that stuff I've written before. I just wrote and directed a film that I had a screening for a few days ago, which was pretty fun. I just financed it myself and made it, and I put some really great people in it who are my friends: Kevin Daniels, Jay Harrington, Bailey Ann Borders, Pauletta Washington, Wes Ramsey, some really great actors.
Would you ever reach out to Seth and say, Seth, you know, I've got a part that I've written just for you?
I have before.
Yeah?
Yeah, Seth was like, okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. No, Seth is, he's you know, he likes good things. So if he's got the time, he'll do it. But yeah, the first project first film that I was trying to make, I wrote, you know, him a part in it. And he was game. And I remember it's funny because I called him and I was like, yeah, I want to set up a meeting. He's like, what? But I was trying to be all like professional. Let me picture this thing. He's like, you're my pal. Just what do you want? Yeah, sure. I'm like, but no, it's got to be. I'm Batman.
That's right. I got to go through your agent. What's the proper channel?
No, like, I'm not. No, I'm not going. No.
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 No, no, no. All right. So, Jay, if they want to continue to follow you and everything that you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
One of the hardest working people in Hollywood.
Thank you.
Where can they find you on the social media?
Everything is Jay Lee Film. JLEEFILM. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And I sort of use those platforms differently. So click and follow at your desire.
I feel like there was going to be a warning coming up there.
It's like, no, you know, it's like, I feel like, you know, you get jokes for free, right? On Twitter, you can come laugh, but you can also learn something. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, all of the other reindeer. Also, maybe don't be a piece of shit to your neighbor. I don't know. Just walk with that.
There you go.
Yeah, so I try to do better. I try to tell people to do better.
Don't poop in a Spencer's.
Or poop in all the Spencer's.
That's right. You don't just poop in one. Poop in, if you're gonna
commit.
Poop one, yep.
Yeah.
Go at all. You can also catch him up singing Kissed by a Rose at Brass Monkey.
Yep. Is that correct? Sometimes I go to Brass. Sometimes I do it in a shower. You know what I mean? Look at that. On cue.
Look at that.
Are we in? Oh, have y'all seen this movie?
Yes.
I'm telling you. All right. This Batman wasn't good, but this song was worth it.
Power rank your Batmans real quick.
Ooh. Dark Knight.
Okay.
Dark Knight Rises. Okay. That was with Bane, right?
Yep.
First Batman.
Okay. That was with Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton.
All right.
Are you talking about the films or the actual Batman?
Let's do the actual Batman.
Actual Batman. I'm going to go, I guess, Michael Keaton, right? You got to go Michael Keaton one. I dig Ben Affleck's Batman.
I do. Yeah, that's the first time I felt like I was seeing the Batman from the comic books.
I kind of dig him. I kind of dig Ben Affleck's sort of you know, grumpy, old, cantankerous, I'm gonna beat the snot out of you, Batman. Yeah. I kind of dig it.
And I liked it because, like, first of all, like, even Michael Keaton, with the way they built the costume, he couldn't really move his neck at all.
Right, right.
And I felt like, you know, like, this was a Batman, I felt like you could see him do all the really cool stuff.
Sure, yeah. And, yeah, and then I feel like, but then you got to also rank Bruce Wayne's versus Batman, and that's a tough one, too, because I might like Ben Affleck's Batman, but I might like Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne. I don't know. It's tough.
Where do you fall on George Clooney or Val Kilmer? Who's better for you?
I love George Kilmer.
He's the best. That George Kilmer. Can't get enough of him. Love him. He's fantastic.
No, they're amazing. I only watched those once though.
Oh,
George Clooney had the nipples, though. I was with in Robin and Batgirl.
Yep. Oh, that was a little rough.
It was a little rough.
But every time they do that shot at the end where they're running in front of the bat signal and they kind of run in silhouette, I'm always like, That's a cool way to go out.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm in. I'll rock with it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On. My guest has been Jay Lee. You can catch him hanging out with Scott Grimes. You're going to be flying some ships.
Yes.
Yep.
And I got, you know what? Real quick, I got to say hi to my whole cast. Seth,
do it.
Penny, Adrian, Halston, Peter, Mark, Scott, all the PAs, the grips, cameramen, lighting, grips, electric, sound, score, props, sound, special effects, costumes, transpo, trailers, the lot, everybody.
All right, now I'm going to ask you to power rank the cast and crew. All right, let's go.
Oh, man.
We're
out of time. Oh, no. Damn.
All right.
Well, oh, man. Something's wrong with the mic.
Oh, no. Yes, we tried, but maybe next time. That'll be the whole interview.
Everybody's great. Everybody gets stars.
Everybody stars.
Everybody gets check pluses.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, big thanks again for Jay Lee for joining us. Make sure you catch the Orville on Thursday night. Yes.
Yeah, Thursday night.
It is. It's a really fun science fiction show. It's kind of nice to be able to get that kind of revisit from Star Trek, the old school kind of Star Trek.
Yeah, it feels good.
Yeah.
And feel free to tweet with us. I know the whole cast. We like to tweet with y'all. So.
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah.
And speaking of tweeting, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at HappyGoJackie. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On. We'll see you back here next time right here on AfterBuzz TV. Play us out, Seal.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Joe Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.